How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide here on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We got so much stuff to talk about here today. As noted, we are live, so we'll be taking your phone calls as well over the course of the next 2 hours. We'll be throwing out the phone numbers here in a bit. Probably go about 20 minutes before we start taking those phone calls, so be ready, but do not call now. We're going to be talking all sorts of news, including next week's biggest pay-per-view of the summer. WWE's SummerSlam is coming up on Sunday. It's actually a very packed weekend, as we will talk about. Not only is the SummerSlam pay-per-view taking place, but if you are a member of the website, or in fact, if you're listening to this right now, you can join us pretty much all over the world. We're having Super China Buffet Day celebrations, as we call it, and we'll tell you how to get involved in that, particularly if you're here in the Seattle area, as a bunch of us are getting together to have a buffet, followed by coming over to my house to watch SummerSlam. So if you're in the area, stick around, and we'll give you all the information about how you can be involved in that. And, of course, this coming Saturday, if you are in the Northwest, the Portland area, I will be wrestling. Give you all the details about how you can come and watch that show this coming Saturday night. And, of course, we will preview the SummerSlam pay-per-view. A lot of stuff to talk about regarding SummerSlam. We'll talk about all of the matches on the show. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, Stephanie McMahon versus Brie Bella. All of those matches. Of course, this past weekend, we also had the G1 Finals. The new Japan G1 Climax Tournament is over. Mike and I are going to talk about the final day of that tournament. Mike actually can probably talk about most of the tournament. I did watch the entire final, so we'll talk about that. There is a new G1 champion. If you've not seen the show, I won't reveal it right now, in case you want to stop listening for the time being until you happen to see it. We're going to talk all about the G1 coming up in the next segment as well. So a lot of things to get into today. Be prepared to call. It's going to be a fun time. So stick around, everybody. Back in a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of stuff to talk about today here on the program. And Mike, how you doing?
Doing fantastic, Brian.
Always good to hear. I see that you did a nearly three-hour sin limite with Dave just prior to doing this, so I'm sure you're all ready for another 2 hours.
We actually did a fully 3-hour one a couple nights ago on Wednesday night for members of the site. There's another one up today, which went 2.5 hours, which covers the G1, all the news that's been going on, as well as a ton of questions as well, too. So I tell you what, and I'm not just tooting my own horn here, I'm really tooting Dave's horn. When it comes to spending the money on our site, if you like this show, you would absolutely adore those Wrestling Observer Sin Limite shows.
The finals are over, and I warned everybody in the first segment, if you don't want spoilers, you should probably have stopped listening right now. But the winner of the 2014 G1 tournament is Kazuchika Okada. Beat Shinsuke Nakamura in the main event after 3 Rainmaker Lariats in an excellent match. And Mike, if you look back at all of the matches, did you see every single show in this tournament?
I've missed a couple matches here and there, but I've been able to go back and see everything. The only thing I'm missing now is most of, believe it or not, the next to last show that took place on Friday night, Saturday morning at Yokohama Bunka Gymnasium. I only saw the last few matches of that one, but for the rest of it, I finally got myself caught up on it all.
How did the main event here, the finals, rank in terms of the best matches in the tournament?
It was up there. It really, really was. It was a great match between Okada and Nakamura. This is the special thing about this match is these guys have only crossed paths, being on opposite sides, a handful of times. The last time being in 2012, where Nakamura defeated Okada on the way to Okada winning the G1 tournament that year, but it was never focused upon. In fact, there were a couple of Japanese-based fan sites that called this the forbidden match. A lot of people believe that Nakamura and Okada was such a special match that it wouldn't take place until New Japan's WrestleMania on January 4th. They decided to not do that and actually go ahead and make it the finals of the G1 at the Cebu Dome that took place today. And it was one hell of a match. Now, the thing is, there were so many great matches that took place in this tournament. And it's not hyperbole to say that this was the greatest tournament that's ever taken place in the history of professional wrestling, arguably in any ringed sport as well, too. I know people with pride from a couple years ago, the middleweight and heavyweight Grand Prix and things like that. But this was just an absolutely, you know, amazing affair. Each night boasted, if not one, two to three, four-star matches that were absolutely off the hook. There's been a handful of matches, and again, a handful each night that you could say was the match of the year. And Okada and Nakamura was really no different. Was it better than Okada and Suzuki the night before? Was it better than Nakamura and Shibata from even night one 2 weeks ago? You know, who's to say? There was so much great wrestling that took place. No one would be wrong in what they thought was the best.
Now, with Okada winning this year, I mean, when does he traditionally get his title shot?
That's the thing. It's much like a Money in the Bank sort of thing. If you win the G1 Climax tournament, you get the number one contender, or you at least have a title shot in your back pocket. Historically, what guys have done has been wait till the WrestleMania that New Japan has, which is every January 4th at the Tokyo Dome. I would assume that that's going to be the case this time as well, too. It will just be interesting to see whether or not AJ Styles is still the champion at that time. Dave and I talked about it a little bit this week. You know, AJ Styles won the title this past May in Fukuoka, Japan, and he's been a very good champion. He got off to a rocky start. There were people that weren't sure whether his inclusion into New Japan and the top heel group, the Bullet Club, basically effectively replacing Prince Devitt in that role. A lot of people weren't sure how that was going to go. It has actually gotten along great, to the point where Japanese fans like AJ Styles a lot, and it would not shock me whatsoever to see him actually retain the belt through January 4th, maybe even make it as far as a year. But there's a lot of options that New Japan has and a lot of options that they have at their fingertips, whether it be Okada cashing in and winning, whether it be him losing the opportunity to Nakamura down the line. There's a lot of things that could possibly happen.
You know, I was watching the match and the aftermath and everything like that, and you know, Okada had been the champion for a long time, and then AJ Styles came to the company, and he belittled Okada. He said he was the same young boy that he had been when Okada had a horrible run, by the way, in Impact, on TNA Impact Wrestling, when they turned him into
Okada.
Okada, that's right.
Yes.
It was just horrible. And so he belittled the guy, and then he beat him. And in between singles matches and between that one match in Ring of Honor, AJ has beaten him three times this year. And if I recall correctly, Okada made it in the finals by beating AJ. Is that right?
Yes, he did.
So when you look at this, I mean, it makes perfect sense that Okada ends up winning the G1 here. He ends up going to the Tokyo Dome, and it's a one-year-long story of him finally getting his revenge against AJ and winning the title back. And I don't know if that's the way they're going to go, but I just watched it, and I thought it's amazing how good this simple booking can be when you don't have some guy coming in and changing his mind about what direction he wants to go every single week on television.
Yeah, and I mean, that would make the most sense. And I should say, I mean, Okada didn't beat AJ Styles to truly make it into the finals. He won his last match was against Minoru Suzuki in what was a great match on the 8th. But he actually began this whole G1 by finally getting his win over AJ Styles on the very first night of the tournament.
Okay, so there you go.
But still, and I mean, that would make a lot of sense, Nakamura being involved in the title picture. Can you imagine a Nakamura, AJ Styles match on January 4th? Again, just all depending on when Okada chooses to take his title defense and what exactly New Japan's plans are, which, again, they have so much at their disposal. It will be interesting to see what direction they go because, again, they have a lot of weapons and a lot going on right now.
With the exception of maybe like Manabu Nakanishi, I don't think there are too many people on this roster that AJ would have a bad match with for the title.
No, and you know, you after this tournament, Yujiro Takahashi, who is again the Bullet Club, which is the lead heel group that's over there, he's kind of had a gimmick where this was a good tournament for him to really show his stuff and kind of take it to the next level. He actually went in reverse with this thing. And with that said, Hiroshi Tanahashi and he had a match a couple years ago that actually was the main event of a November pay-per-view for the title. So when it comes to all of these guys, they're so fundamentally sound and they're just so good and so passionate and so strong at what they do. It's very difficult to have bad matches between any of these guys or an American who can keep up. And AJ Styles has more than proven, you know, his end of the deal. He's been talking over the last couple weeks over, you know, he could stay in New Japan full time. Carl Anderson has talked about this, too, as far as there's no reason to leave. They're incredibly happy. Alex Shelley is another one. Lance Archer, Davey Boy Smith. These guys are not making the money that the Stan Hansons, Invaders, and Steve Williams of the past have made. But as far as honing their craft and putting on some incredibly fantastic performances, they all did it.
Speaking of the Bullet Club, there is a new member of the Bullet Club in the form of all people, Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett showed up during intermission and he came out and he signed an agreement between Global Force Wrestling and New Japan. Global Force obviously is Jarrett's new promotion. And he was there with Scott D'Amore. So at least he's got a good booker on board. I'll give him that much. So he cut a promo, babyface promo. They were treating him like he was a really big deal. So later on in the show, AJ Styles is facing Tanahashi. AJ is the new head of the Bullet Club. And they do this match, and AJ gets pinned with a cradle. So Tanahashi, by the way, comes in third place and beats the champion. So they've got a lot of different ways they can go as far as title matches for AJ down the road. But anyway, AJ afterwards is just beating the hell out of Tanahashi. He gives him the Styles Clash. And finally, D'Amore and Jeff Jarrett hit the ring, and they run off the heels. But it is, in fact, a swerve. And we're going to talk about this swerve when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking the New Japan show. We'll be taking your phone calls as well. Phone numbers have been thrown out, 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. And Mike, after setting up this whole deal with Jeff Jarrett, I think it's pretty obvious where everything ended up. Am I correct? A swerve. Jeff Jarrett pulled out the guitar. He waffled Tanahashi. Jeff Jarrett has joined the Bullet Club, of all things. And I guess the most important question here is, are we actually going to see a Jeff Jarrett versus Hiroshi Tanahashi match?
Probably. That would make the most sense. And that's not the worst thing in the world either. Probably there's some people that are listening going, you know, my God, no. But, you know, it was pretty obvious when Scott D'Amore came out behind Jeff Jarrett, and he was never mentioned at all when Jeff Jarrett came to the ring in intermission and did the whole contract signing or the whole agreement signing with the president of New Japan Pro Wrestling. D'Amore was carrying this big guitar case, and nothing was ever said about it. And then when the Bullet Club was attacking Tanahashi, of all people, Jarrett and D'Amore roll out. And they're wearing pretty much all black, by the way, too. So if that was a tip to anybody, and the heels go scattering without being touched. Jeff Jarrett helps Tanahashi up to his feet, and as he does, he gets handed a guitar by D'Amore, which as Jarrett faced the camera and Tanahashi was turned the other way, you could see it had the Bullet Club logo on it, and he waffled him with that. And it looks as though Jeff Jarrett and Scott D'Amore have joined the Bullet Club. I wonder if we get Karen Jarrett as part of that as well, too, as the Bullet Club brouhaha. Would be relatively entertaining, I would assume, since Maria won't be over there all the time. So I can see it being a thing where a lot of people go, why is this 47-year-old old man going to face off against Tanahashi? He's not wrestling that much. We just don't want to see him. The fact of the matter is the match will be very good. Tanahashi can work with everyone. Jeff Jarrett has always had a history of working with everyone as well. And I think as long as it's a thing where he is not on every single show, which he probably won't be, much like they've done the NWA stuff, much like they do a lot with the Bullet Club as it is, as well as other things, I think you have to trust in the booking of Jado and Gato, the New Japan bookers, that this whole thing is probably going to end up pretty good, just because most of the stuff that they've had to touch has turned to gold, or at least has been made a lot of sense. So I don't think there's any reason to panic. I can see people who are fans of New Japan and fans of the Bullet Club thinking this is watered down NWO style or something like that, but I probably have to see how everything's going to play out.
All right, let's take this call. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, this is Chris in Las Vegas.
What's up, Chris?
Well, I kind of wanted to talk about New Japan and whatnot, but I wanted to go back into the past. Have either of you read the book, Chris Benoit's book, Ring of Hell?
It's about Chris Benoit, but it's not Chris Benoit's book. But yes, I've read Ring of Hell.
Oh, okay. Well, I was reading it, and I was wondering how, I guess, the bit it's changed over there. Because after reading the book, I kind of went, I kind of see how he ended up, all these things would happen with all the way that they would torture each other and some of the rituals that they performed being the PG show. I don't know how much I can say, but I was wondering if you guys could give me more information about how much truth is that and how much has it changed over the time.
Now, before you, we'll go to Mike for that one, but before we do, so you're suggesting that maybe what he went through in New Japan was why he did what he did?
Yes, from New Japan, from where being at the Hart House in Canada, and obviously the getting hit in the head, you doing the headbutts off the top rope, it seems to add up with the people he was around. He was already around a sadistic kind of people or to begin with.
Well, I will just say this, that Chris Benoit was far from the only guy to go through the Hart House, and he was far from the only guy to go through the New Japan system, but he's the only guy who has been responsible for a suicide-homicide. So I cannot say that necessarily one had anything to do with the other. In fact, I would say one probably had nothing to do with the other. But I think that obviously all of the headbutts, the head injuries, the concussions, a lot of drinking, a lot of drug use, and God only knows what else. That to me is probably a bigger deal than what he went through during his training. But Mike, how is the training today as compared to in the past?
I'm sure it's soft. I know it's still tough. I'm sure some of it has been softened up, and there have been issues in sumo in Japan. And look, this isn't necessarily just a Japanese thing either. I mean, you know, WWE ran a short little tape with Bob Roop at Eddie Graham's request, stretching somebody out that they played on, at the very least on the WWE Classics. They played it on the Round Table, and I'm pretty sure you could see it up on the WWE site as well. That was just, that's what she did. And at least, no, I take that back. That's what some people did. On the website or on YouTube right now, Gaia Girls is up there, which is a very stark and for a lot of people is going to be startling and maybe somewhat depressing look at how the women were trained over there. And there's, you know, Brian can tell you there's been stories here about how women were trained. Forget the men. You know, women have had it tougher from many reports as far as getting into the business and what they've had to deal with, not only due to men, but due to the women. So it doesn't make any of it right, but there was a lot of that sort of stuff. And I cannot say, I don't know. I haven't been in a dojo to know what it's like right now, but you know, Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, Rocky Romero, who would probably be the best one to ask. And I wonder if he would talk about it on his podcast that he does with Carl Anderson, since he was a part of, if I recall correctly, the Inoki Dojo in Los Angeles, which was not the best thing in the world as far as being well run. I'm not sure about the conditions or anything like that, but he has been there. He's obviously been through ROH and been in Japan multiple times. So maybe they could talk about it at length a little bit better, but I'm sure much of it has been toned down. With that said, I'm sure it's also still very, very tough.
Okay. All right. I was just kind of curious. By reading it, I was like, man, it made me not want to be a wrestling fan after reading all these things that they go through. And I knew it was always tough. I always knew that the boys ribbed each other, but it just seemed a little out there. And thank
you.
Well,
I mean, look at what the story that Jim Cornette would tell about the guys in Knoxville or wherever it was that did the whole gimmick with the secretary about faking that they were shot, and some of the ribs that are, I mean, the cruelty that is some of the cruel stories are, you know, through the roof. Mr. Fuji and the dog and all of the other ones that have been rumored over time. You know, there are some tough and odd people and some tough and odd situations in wrestling throughout the whole history of it. It's not just isolated to one person or one group or anything.
By the way, we had somebody here on Twitter who said that Okada said post-match he's going to take back his property at the Tokyo Dome. So there you go. 2015 Tokyo Dome main event. I am taking back my property, he said. That was the quote. So I guess he's cashing it in on January 4th. That is official. All right, to the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? Make sure you turn us down. You're on the air.
Hi there, this is Jeff from San Francisco.
Jeff, what's up?
I want to talk about the WWE Network.
All right.
And how I think I'm going to cancel it when my 6 months is up, because I don't really see what they could possibly do that would make me want to pay another 6 months. And I love old wrestling. I love classic wrestling. It's really not that issue. It's just I've already got gigabytes and gigabytes on my computer. There's tons on YouTube. Like, I can't think of anything they could possibly do to make me want to give them another 6 months worth of money.
So what you're telling me is you have no interest whatsoever in SummerSlam, for example.
Well, I mean, I do have an interest in SummerSlam, but I don't know if it's a $60 interest in SummerSlam when it's really not very difficult to get that for free illegally.
I see.
I mean, one of the reasons I was excited about the network is I wanted to do it legally because it was so much cheaper. But since I'm pretty bored with all the content other than new stuff they have up there, I mean, I'm very tempted to go back to the old means of getting it. And I was really hoping that they would just blow me away and make me want to give them $10 a month for the rest of my life.
That
has not seemed to happen.
Have you had any interest in the like the June and July pay-per-views, or you could care less about those as well?
I could care less about those.
Ask this guy works listening before you kick him loose.
I could still watch them since they haven't really seemed to have done anything to prevent any piracy on any level since the network started, including multiple users, YouTube, torrent sites. I mean, nothing's really changed other than I gave WWE a chance, and I really didn't see them do anything to make me want to stick with them.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. We'll Mike and I could talk a little bit about this after the break. We've got to head to a break. But Mike, he's far from the only one who is considering quitting after their 6 months is up, which is kind of funny because SummerSlam is actually looking to be a pretty great show.
Well, you know, never know what's going to push somebody's buttons. Look at how many people have canceled, you know, before their initial run was even over. So I guess there's some people where really they'll pay for Mania and have their interest in that and the rest of it be damned.
All right, we're going to head to a break, everybody. Back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com or on the American Forces Network, the Cable Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio app, TuneIn Radio, searching Wrestling Observer, the most listened to wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the entire world. And if you want more, if you only get this show once per week, you are missing out. Daily radio shows up at WrestlingObserver.com. Every single day we do brand new shows. We've had so many big guests on over the last couple of weeks, and we've got a very, very big guest coming up this week. I will go as far as to say one of the biggest names ever in the history of wrestling, particularly if you're a fan of the Monday Night Wars. Obviously, the options are limited, but I'll talk more about that when we get it confirmed. That's coming up this week. But if you enjoy the show, as noted, $9.99 a month if you sign up for a long-term subscription to WrestlingObserver.com, not only to get all the brand new shows, but every single show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 is available in our archives right now. Thousands and thousands of radio shows are available with the biggest names in wrestling history. We do shows on Lucha Libre, New Japan, review all of the Raw show, SmackDown show, NXT, Ring of Honor. I got another show coming up tonight. No shortage of audio if you sign up as a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. When the show is over, you can head up and check out the Sin Limite that Mike did with Dave. 2.5 hours of pro wrestling audio. You can download the shows, listen to them on your commute, listen to them at work, listen to them wherever. If you love pro wrestling audio, guaranteed, no better website in the entire world to get wrestling and mixed martial arts audio. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. And while I'm on the subject of plugging, Saturday night, August 16th, Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon, I will be returning to the ring. I'll be wrestling Buddy Wayne on the debut of the Wrestle Sport promotion. There's more information up at wrestle-sport.com. Once again, that is wrestle-sport.com. It is August 16th, this Saturday night, Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. If you're in the area, I urge you to stop by. God knows how many matches I have left. This could conceivably be the last one, but you should check it out if you're in the area. Buddy and I always have a real fun time, so I plan on beating him unmercifully, so you can go down there and check it out.
Wait a second now. Look, I know Buddy has been through a lot, and I know you are. Look, you haven't wrestled in a while, but you are in fantastic shape, Buddy. Not in the type of shape that you are in, but just remember something. He taught you a lot, but he didn't teach you everything.
Hey, that's
true. There's a lot that Buddy Wayne has got left, you know, kind of sitting. Look, this is a guy. This is a guy that crossed paths. This is how long Buddy Wayne has been in the business. Crossed paths with Masahiro Chono, New Japan superstar, before he was a superstar in Newfoundland. That's how long Buddy Wayne's been in the game, and you don't know what kind of tricks he has picked up along the way.
That's right. That's right. He did, in fact, have matches with Chono when Chono was a young boy. I believe he once went 30 days straight with Masa Chono, which was probably a lot tougher than one match this Saturday night with me, but who knows? I don't know, so check that out. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm sorry. This is Eric from Chicago.
Eric, what's up?
I had a quick TNA question for you. I know that Dixie Carter's been having a hard time getting, you know, Spike to re-sign with the network, and the rumor that I've heard is that because TNA really doesn't have any kind of big star power. I know that there's that clause in between the companies where, you know, guys can't jump ship immediately because of, you know, the interest and everything. What about, though, if she wants someone like a CM Punk bad enough, couldn't she sign and just, like, pay the fine for whatever it is? Because, I mean, he's a free agent. He officially said he's quitting WWE. Why wouldn't he be someone she'd look at? Because he's definite star power that they would need. And at that point, I think Spike would want to re-sign him, wouldn't they?
Well, a couple of things. First off, CM Punk doesn't want to ever wrestle again. And if he did want to wrestle again, I would presume he would go to Japan or find a way back into WWE. I don't see him having TNA anywhere on his radar. So I think that is number one. Number two, I mean, he is a free agent right now. I mean, he could go to TNA tomorrow if he wanted to. But again, I don't think he wants to. And three, if there were some sort of deal that prohibited him from going to TNA, it's more than just a fine. This could run into the millions and millions of dollars when you're talking a contract tampering lawsuit. So they're not going to just go and steal anybody from WWE. They couldn't afford it anyway. They've cut a number of guys. I don't think that the reason that TNA is not being re-signed has anything to do with star power. I think there are larger issues than that. I mean, star power doesn't really matter if you are drawing the same ratings and the same viewership, whether you've got big stars or not. You know, Spike TV isn't looking at who's on the show. They're looking at how are the numbers. And with TNA, the numbers are, the numbers are what they are. They seem to do the exact same, whether they've got a big angle or whether they don't. The whole Dixie Carter thing this Thursday night, they promoted that like crazy forever. And at the end of the day, they did the exact same numbers they always do after all that promotion.
Coming off some of the better television that they've done with all the hype, with people talking about how good the TV has actually been the last couple of weeks as well.
That's right. So I don't think it's an issue of star power. I don't think it's an issue of You know, I think it's just they may not think it's cost effective right now. So I don't know. But I don't think, you know, there's no chance of CM Punk, and I don't think that signing a star or two is really going to help him all that much in negotiations.
Not at all. He doesn't need the money. He certainly doesn't need what has happened there. And I mean, look at guys who may have his mentality, the AJ Styles, the Shelleys, you know, guys who have had the same type of wrestling mentality he has had, that have been there and that want nothing to do with it. I don't think it would be a wise move, even if it was something that he wanted to do. Things aren't going to get any better for TNA either if the reports, which obviously the WWE was a little overzealous in rewrapping their trucks, their production trucks, to show that SmackDown would be airing on Thursday nights on Sci-Fi. That's not official yet, but the fall schedule has not come out yet officially. When it does, it's very likely SmackDown will be moving to Thursdays on Sci-Fi, which is not something that's going to benefit TNA all that much. I know that most of the million point four viewers that they get, they're isolated pretty good from everything, but college football, I think, will affect them, and most certainly the NFL and WWE.
Did you see the WWE's claim that they had accidentally painted the wrong day, the wrong SmackDown day on all of their production trucks?
Yeah, I don't know why they, and again, they could have a little egg on their face for it or something like that, but I don't. All you have to do is say, stay tuned, and everybody will talk, and does it really matter in the long run? No. So why? I don't even know why they were that concerned about it.
You know, Haven, which Edge is a guest star on, Haven is normally on Fridays. It's kind of, I can't remember if it's a lead-in or if it's after SmackDown. I forget which one it is, but it's paired with SmackDown. And interestingly enough, it has been announced that Haven is moving to Thursdays. What a shocking coincidence.
Seems to make a little sense, I guess, wouldn't it? Hmm. I just wonder what fills in on Friday now.
It's a good question. I don't know. By the way, we got a lot of stuff that we still have to talk about here on this program. You can give us a call, 855-478-4478, but we have not yet talked about what's going on with Alberto Del Rio, who has been fired from WWE. We've got SummerSlam to talk about. But before we go there, I've got to ask you one last question about New Japan here. What's going on with poor Hanma? I thought that it was all being built up for him getting his one big win in the G1. And at the end of the day, he went 0-10 and then didn't even win on the day of the finals.
I don't know what to tell you. I thought he was too. Tomoyuki Hanma, who got his career started way back in 1997. I believe the dude is 38 years old now and got a start in Big Japan. And his whole career, I don't want to call him a complete garbage guy or anything like that, but there was certainly nothing that took place in his career that would have him, anyone believing that he would be a cult superstar in New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2014. He and Tomohiro Ishii both. But Hanma he was a late replacement for Kota Ibushi, the high-flying star that they have, and they had to fix up the tournament, and they had to insert Hanma into the matches that Ibushi was going to have. It is impossible to believe that Kota Ibushi, as big of a star as he is, would have taken the zero like Hanma did, so they obviously did a lot of work in trying to fix some things and figure some things out. Hanma ended up going 0-10 throughout the whole scene. And he was, again, being very popular. He has got this diving Santino style headbutt that he misses all of the time. Ric Flair would hit the backflip in the corner onto his feet more times than Hanma would hit this headbutt that he had. And he's got this headbutt based offense, and he's grown to become a little bit of a cult superstar. And in this tournament, he had, night after night after night, a great match with everyone he faced. The crowd was 100% behind him, and they were praying that he would get an upset in this thing. And when the whole tournament, when it didn't matter, on the very last night of it, he faced Shelton Benjamin, a guy who was also out of the tournament. And a lot of people, including me, were hoping he'd get the win, because I think the pop of the crowd would have been something else. But they chose to not do that, and Benjamin ends up getting the win. Didn't hurt Hanma's stock at all, though, as he came back on the final night. And once again, didn't win, but still popped the crowd immensely. So I don't know if they're going to go with a losing streak thing with him or something like that, but a very entertaining performance for a guy that's nicknamed the Vampire Chicken.
You know, I was watching the show and you know, they had the Hanma match with Naito, and then they had the Ishii match with Carl Anderson, and it was a G1 finals, and it's not like WrestleMania or anything like that, but I think you could say, like, it's a G1 finals, would you say? I guess the whole tournament is kind of like a SummerSlam, all 10 days. Or 11 days or whatever it was. But I mean, this was the big blow-off day. This is where you determine the G1 winner and everything. And I thought, you know, in WWE you have a lot of happy endings on these big shows. And I mean, would it really have been the worst thing in the history of the world for Hanma to beat Naito? Would it really have been the worst thing, especially with Ishii and Carl Anderson? Would that really have been the worst thing in the world? The fans so badly wanted those two guys to win. You know, they booed Naito. Obviously, they're going to boo Anderson, but I don't know. I just, you know, it was two in a row. First, they beat Hanma, then they beat Ishii, and I was just like, man, what a downer of a day.
And they had a hell of a match earlier on this year with each other. Again, I it would not hurt my feelings whatsoever if these two actually became a cult tag team. They're very stagnant in the tag team division as it is, and I think they would be a great, great addition to it. As well as both of them, especially Ishii, actually getting himself an IWGP title tilt down the line. I don't think people would believe it with Hanma. They definitely would believe it with when it comes to Ishii, though, and would be begging for the upset, even though that probably wouldn't be the case.
I'd buy that show.
Absolutely. I mean, look how Ishii is great with everybody. And again, that type of Rocky story for the Stone Pitbull leading him up to the main event would be incredible.
I almost wonder if, I don't know. Sometimes there's those guys that, like, you love them and you want to see him do well and you want to see him get that match. But I don't know how it would work to have him actually be the champion. You know,
wouldn't do it.
Huh?
Wouldn't do it at all.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be believable enough. And again, there's other titles that they have there where...
That's what I was thinking. You could give him like he loses in the IWGP championship match, but then he gets this big win and gets a never title or something like that. They're sort of like their Intercontinental title, but it's actually a title that means something, unlike the WWE Intercontinental title. We got to head to a break, everybody. Back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, you had an update on Ishii.
Well, it should be noted that Ishii did hold on to the NEVER Championship, and in fact, that was the title tilt that he had this year with... Tomioki Hanma, that was really awesome, but he ended up losing that belt to Yujiro Takahashi, who's the newest member of the Bullet Club. The thing with Ishii is right now, though, he could have a title match and lose for the IWGP title. He could have an IC title match and lose, although he would be fitting with that belt, but if he were to win the NEVER title again, it would give it instant credibility back up to where it probably could be. For a little while there, it was so exciting. It was, you know, the third title, but it was starting to creep up a little bit and hold its own. With Yujiro holding it, it's really gone down. But if Hanma or Ishii were to actually get their hands on it here in the next couple of months, all of the shine would be right back onto it.
All right, we're going to head to our hourly break here in a moment. When we come back, everybody, we've got a lot of news to discuss, including SummerSlam. It's coming up. The WWE's biggest show of the summer. We'll run down all the matches on the show. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. Stephanie McMahon versus Brie Bella, which may actually have a surprise guest referee being added. So we'll talk about that. Plus, we'll take your phone calls and a lot of other topics to get into as well, including what happened to Alberto Del Rio, fired from WWE. That's coming up after the break. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline at USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of stuff to talk about here today. We're going to take your phone calls coming up after the next break, and we'll be talking SummerSlam, Alberto Del Rio, and so much more. And Mike, SummerSlam is coming up in just 7 days. Next week is SummerSlam Sunday, And I guess tomorrow we'll have the final build towards the Brock Lesnar-John Cena match. It's an interesting match in that John Cena has been working on a movie, and so he has not been on Raw. And Brock Lesnar obviously has limited dates, and so he has done a couple of video packages. They did a sit-down interview with him. I think they've done a pretty good job with the build, not having any angles. I think there's a lesson to be learned from that. Very quickly, your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Again, you don't necessarily need them there if you have the right pieces in place and you tape the right stuff. And with Paul Heyman being around, how could you go wrong? Between that and having, you know, Brie Bella and Stephanie McMahon being the sports entertainment portion of the proceedings and having that, you know, main event your night. Again, they're doing a pretty darn good job with the fact that those two guys aren't there.
We're going to head to our first break here in this hour. When we come back, the firing of Alberto Del Rio. We're going to run down the entire card for SummerSlam, as well as take your phone calls. The number, toll-free, 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Here to talk all of the news. We're going to run down the SummerSlam card here in a moment. But first, Mike, the firing, the shocking firing of Alberto Del Rio. He apparently was in catering, or maybe he wasn't in catering, but something happened, and I guess somebody didn't clean up their plate. And when they were asked about why didn't you clean up their plate, they said something to the effect of, that's Del Rio's job, you know?
Yeah, it was a member of the social media part of WWE that didn't clean off his plate in catering, and the people said, hey, you know, it's a good protocol to go ahead and do that. And he made a joke, a crack that I guess from his point of view was just a little bit of blue humor. But when word got back to Del Rio about it, he didn't take it that way and went up to the guy and put hands on him. In fact, gave him, as Dave said, it was described as more of a Dave Schultz, John Stossel style of smack. It wasn't just some, like, you know, slight backhand or something like that. He put it on a pretty heavy. Which forced WWE to come down on Del Rio. Still no word on, for the off-color joke, if anything is going to happen to the other person. But Del Rio ended up being fired, and Triple H took to Twitter for anyone who out there who complained about the fact that Del Rio was fired. And there are a lot of people who are upset about that, especially the wrestlers. But with it being a publicly traded company, Triple H had to come out and say, look, you got to be professional. And that's what happened. And nobody, if you're upset with WWE, you should really be upset with Del Rio for not carrying himself in a professional manner, despite the fact that he looked at that as a real slight.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of ways to look at the story. I mean, number one, the guy that made the comment, I mean, I'm shocked he's still employed, especially when they're in cost-cutting mode.
Well, you know what? The fact that he got drilled across the face is the only thing that's saving him. Now, after this, if I were him, I'd be looking for other employment because they will take any opportunity they have to get rid of him, especially if the wrestlers are that upset about it.
Yeah.
And you know what? Deservedly so, because you can say that that was a joke, and that's fine. But if the other person, you got to be careful. If there's somebody else who's not taking that as a joke, you're in trouble,
especially
in a corporate structure.
It's one thing to make a joke, but and it was a stupid joke anyway. As a fellow Mexican, I stand by Mr. Del Rio being upset about such a statement. But when the guy comes up to you and he's very upset about it, just apologize to the guy. However, this escalated. It escalated to the point where Del Rio walloped him. I mean, he apparently just slapped the bejesus out of him. So,
and this is a man who did fight in Pride and Deep.
And that's right. You know, I would have quickly apologized to Mr. Del Rio had I made a joke. But so regardless, I mean, it's everybody's fault here. Obviously, Del Rio should never have hit the guy. You know, the company. I mean, what they say he should have done is go to human resources. You know, the guy never should have made the joke. Del Rio never should have hit the guy. It's everybody's fault. The one thing with Del Rio, the people that are really up in arms about the Del Rio thing, Del Rio he's got money. It's not, I mean, he doesn't have all those cars, obviously. That's a gimmick. But this is a guy who he's made a lot of money in his career. He has a lot of money. He's invested a lot of money. This guy's not hurting for money. This guy doesn't need, he doesn't need this job. There's a million places he can go if he still wants to wrestle. He's been disappointed with how he's been used in WWE for well over a year. I was told that there had been talk of him wanting to get out a year ago, and they wanted him to stay around because they desperately want a Hispanic superstar. And so he essentially stuck around for all of that extra time, but he doesn't need to be there. He doesn't care. Furthermore, his former manager, Ricardo Rodriguez, was released a week ago. So we're talking about a situation where in about 90 days, they can go wherever they want as a group. You know, if TNA still exists and they have any money, they can go to TNA together as a package deal. They can do any dates as a package deal, Ring of Honor, New Japan, AAA. They can go wherever they want. He's going to be fine. So you can be upset about the situation. You can be upset about everything that happened. But anybody that like feels bad for Del Rio, I don't know if you should necessarily feel bad for the guy. I think that he's probably quite happy right now.
Yeah, obviously, professionally, he's going to be in a much happier situation working with AAA if they can ever get off the ground. That's been talked about for a long time, the whole deal with the LRA network and running pay-per-view and things like that. Obviously, he's a natural fit there. He really is a fit in New Japan as well, too. There's a million and one things he could do. Not the least of which, as you talked about, when it comes to the American indie scene, Ring of Honor probably wouldn't be a good one. But you know what? Even something as far as PWG, you know, even Chikara could find use for Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez. And what's Del Rio's real name is Rodriguez, if I'm not mistaken. So they can just be the Rodriguezes and do some sort of takeoff of that. And as a package deal, it's a pretty darn good one.
I always thought they were going to do a storyline where Ricardo ended up being his brother, and you can essentially do it now, and a lot of different ways it can go. Let's go to the
phones.
And
you know what else? Oh. You know what else? Before we go back to the phones, Brodus Clay, the former Brodus Clay, who started his career in WWE after his run on NXT or whatever they called it, he was Alberto Del Rio's bodyguard. You can join him on the indie scene. There you go, Chikara, King of Trios, book it.
And thought of that one. To the phones, you're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? You are on the air.
Blown away from with my idea for Chikara.
I guess so. You've stunned him into silence. All right, let's try this caller. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? All right, turn me down and you are on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, I got a question for you. The guy that called about the Chris Benoit thing?
Yes.
I think Chris Benoit was murdered by another professional wrestler, Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, really?
I was doing a thing on a computer, and I came a thing about wrestling, and I came across, and I heard someone say, well, he was going to kill this guy. And then when I got the full story, it was about how Chris Benoit took Nancy from Kevin, and Kevin was upset about that, and that somebody overheard him saying that he was going to kill Chris Benoit.
So how did Kevin Sullivan get away with this crime?
Well, for some reason, he was never investigated about this.
I see.
He was never investigated. And they were saying that, I forgot, it was something where he went to Chris's house when Chris was away. And that's when he got into the house and he killed Nancy, and then he waited for Chris to come home. So,
and you found this information on the internet?
Yes. If you Google it, go to KevinSullivan.com, and then it should come up where it will say, did Kevin Sullivan murder Chris Benoit's family?
And the answer to this question on this website is yes?
It should be, yeah, because it had a whole bunch of things. Because,
you know, Brian, I did hear Kevin Sullivan not only had something to do with that, but also shot down TWA Flight 800.
I didn't hear that one.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Pierre Salinger actually said that many years ago, found that online as well.
How about that? Yeah, maybe go Google Kevin Sullivan and TWA and see what comes up and report back to us. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds good. I'll call you next week.
All right, please do. Thank you very much for the call. I don't think that he's going to find the information he's looking for.
Maybe not, but, well, it'll give him something to do because he sounds like he may need it.
I should throw out the After Dark lines while we're at it. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Richard from Montreal.
Richard, what's up?
Thank God.
Great program tonight.
Thank you.
I thought that was a regular TV slap Alberto did. I never thought it was like a vicious slap like that.
Oh, he 30 seconds, apparently 30. He gave him a good waffling.
Okay, my question, do you guys think Daniel Bryan will be the top guy? Because I think the ship has sailed because Roman Reigns will be like the new guy.
So thank you very much for the call. We're going to go to the break. We will tackle Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns when we come back. And by the way, for those of you listening that don't know what's going on, I can confirm to you that, in fact, Kevin Sullivan did not kill Chris Benoit. So I'll save you some time Googling on the internet. All right, we're going to head to a break. Back in a moment. Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of news today. Still got to do our SummerSlam preview. Previous caller asked about Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. And no, I do not expect that when Daniel Bryan returns, he will be the number one guy. Daniel Bryan was never the number one guy. I don't think he will ever be the number one guy. I love Daniel Bryan, but WWE, past, present, and future, has their guys that they push as the number one guy. And up to this point, it has been John Cena. And unless something goes terribly wrong, the next guy is going to be Roman Reigns. Now, Daniel Bryan may be a very, very strong number two, maybe a number three, but I don't think he's going to be number one. That does not mean he's never going to be the champion again. It just means he will not be the number one guy. And there's nothing wrong with that. There could only be one about every decade. And right now, it's looking like that guy is probably going to end up being Roman Reigns.
And you know what, for real wrestling fans, and I think for just even the average wrestling fan that pays attention and watches every week intently, they know it didn't all go well for Daniel Bryan, and they know that wasn't his fault. It was WWE's fault, and he'll always have that, even if he's not in the top mix at all times, which, again, he will be. He's a top six guy when it comes to the last three matches on the show. He's always going to be in there because people love him. They love chanting for him. They, you know, he can work with everyone. That's, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, the best worker in the company. We'll see how he is coming back. But, you know, even a one-armed Daniel Bryan is better than lots of people on that roster. So even if it's not Roman Reigns, it'll probably then be Seth Rollins. It would make more sense. Again, that's what they look for. That's the kind of look that they like. And he's a little bit smaller than what they would like. They would sure like it to be Roman Reigns. But Daniel Bryan still has a career in the WWE. And he's a guy that has now proven himself to be truly unsinkable. Antonio Cesaro, obviously not unsinkable. Dolph Ziggler, not unsinkable, although he's doing a good job of it. But Daniel Bryan, I think, no matter what they do to him, no matter how badly they try to emasculate him, and they've tried that already, he's still going to be a guy who will always bounce back and who they'll always have to fall back on, because he'll be sitting there in the corner smiling after they screw a bunch of stuff up and they need a quick fix. Daniel Bryan will always be a great quick fix.
All right, let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Dave from Wisconsin.
Dave, what's happening?
Just calling to tell you that Kevin Sullivan's also a devil worshiper. But regardless of that, but with the Del Rio firing, a guy like Randy Orton that has had a number of, like, lots of second, third, fourth chances and has a kind of a history with, like, I don't know, anger management issues. If he gets in trouble again, is WWE really, would they be willing to fire like an Orton?
Well, that's a very good question. I would think that because it is Randy Orton, he probably would suffer a suspension, and they would not fire him. I think that there are a few guys that are their chosen ones, and they would really, really desperately badly have to screw up in order to be released.
All right. Well, that's all I got. I was just curious because, with the money being tighter for them, I was just wondering about that. Thanks.
Sure. Well, thanks very much for the call. Most people need to watch themselves.
That's the thing. I don't know if they would hesitate if something bad enough happened. With that said, they're not going to look for it, and it's got to be probably, you know, a little bit more than cut and dry for an Orton or a Cena or somebody of that ilk.
If Randy Orton pulled a War Machine, for example, I mean, he's out of it.
Yeah.
But if he did lose to Dolph Ziggler this weekend, and the only thing I can figure is that it was because of what happened on Twitter, where he referred to a woman as Miss Piggy, which it's not nice to make fun of people for their weight.
Now, if she would have slapped him, yeah. I think that probably would have been okay, especially Alberto style.
I just think that, is that really where we are, that he called someone fat on Twitter, and this is grounds for a serious punishment?
No, it's piling on because it's Randy Orton, probably.
I guess so.
Because he's got that rep. And look, is it to get under Randy Orton's skin?
I mean, allegedly, this woman is considered a stalker within WWE. And all he did was call her Miss Piggy. You know what I mean? I don't know. And especially coming from a company that for years made fun of Vicky Guerrero and...
As Miss Piggy, right?
Yep.
Or was that Piggy James?
There was Piggy James. There was Vicky Guerrero. There was Molly Holly. They've made fun of many women over the years. For
Jillian and Natalie.
They've considered them to be too fat, which is preposterous in virtually every single case. But the idea that he's in trouble because he called someone Miss Piggy on Twitter, I don't know about that one. I don't know about that one. If you want to give us a call, the phone number, 855-478-4478. Toll free in the U.S. and Canada. That is 855-478-4478. Give us a call. Let us know what is on your mind. Who's winning, Mike? Lesnar or Cena?
Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Even though he's not doing any house shows, he's not doing anything like that, you still think he's winning?
Let me tell you something. I grew up in the 80s. You know, there was a time where I didn't even get to see the champion on TV sometimes. They would have to come around, and I'd have to pay to see them after I walked up the hill 15 miles in the snow. I think they could look. With where they are with the network and everything, I don't think that this scenario, the way it's going to go down, to me is not a bad one. If Lesnar wins this belt and holds on to it till WrestleMania, in fact, maybe even past that, you know, I'd be completely fine with that. And him not appearing every week on TV, great. As long as Paul Heyman is there, as long as there's a pre-tape, as long as there's a video package, as long as there's something to keep me interested and keep it going every single week, doesn't matter to me. Because he could be with, you know, up against a lot of guys, and you could be having matches where it determines who's going to face Lesnar. And they do 2 or 3 weeks of build in a span where they have 5 weeks of TV between pay-per-views, and you can fill that time without Lesnar ever being on there. Or maybe until the very end, till the culmination before the pay-per-view. And even then, you still have mostly Paul Heyman to do that with. So I actually think it's, if done right, it could actually be something that it may not help the network, but you could at least try to do something that would help the network.
All right, let's go to the phones. Oops. That poor guy. Let's try this one. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Frank from New York.
Frank, what's happening?
Basically, I have a question regarding the WWE Raw rating.
All right.
My question is regarding how it's recently dipped below 3.0 again. It seems like the WWE hasn't really broken that 3.0 Raw rating in some time, and I was basically wondering if it had to do with the fact that The Undertaker lost at WrestleMania 30, and if that was kind of the last straw for a lot of the long-time pro wrestling viewers. Maybe a lot of the older ones kind of just tuned out afterwards, because it doesn't seem that they really have gotten out of that 2.7, 2.8 slump since the loss of The Undertaker.
I've never seen or heard any evidence from of any sort that people have stopped watching as a result of what happened at WrestleMania. I mean, I remember when Steve Austin turned heel, which was the last time that large numbers of wrestling fans gave up on pro wrestling. And I remember when that happened, I got emails all the time from people that were upset and had given up on wrestling. And, you know, when WCW died, and I even got emails after what happened with Chris Benoit, when he killed his family and committed suicide. I had all sorts of people emailing me saying I'm done with wrestling for a while. Usually when there is something where large numbers of people stop watching, I usually get a few emails from different people about it. I haven't gotten a single email from people that have stopped watching wrestling because of the loss of The Undertaker. I don't rule it out. I think that it's just these are where the Raw ratings are these days, and I don't think there's really anything that is... I don't think people are being driven off. I think this is just kind of like a normal number for nowadays. Sure. All right, I want to thank you very much.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Really appreciate it. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Matt from Phoenix.
Matt?
Yeah.
Matt, what's going on?
Yeah, I was going to ask about Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez possibly showing up in AAA. A new show starting on the El Rey Network coming pretty soon. You know, what are the chances they could show up and, you know, kind of get that off to a good start? And, you know, also what's going on with Rey Mysterio. Last we heard, he wasn't signing or catching the checks. And, you know, could he jump too? And, you know, really, what are the chances that you know, that could happen?
Well, I can tell you for sure that the AAA would love to have Rey Mysterio. They would love to have Alberto Del Rio. I think there's probably a very good chance they're going to get Del Rio and Ricardo. Ray, I don't see WWE releasing him from his deal anytime soon. It's possible, but I picture them keeping him under contract pretty much as long as humanly possible. So, I think you're very likely to see Del Rio in AAA. The big question to me really is what this new AAA U.S. promotion is going to be about. If you're talking about the USA version, if you're talking about AAA in Mexico, I'm sure they'd love him there. I'm sure he'd go there, do whatever. But we don't even really know a lot about the AAA U.S. promotion. It's not really going to be like a wrestling promotion. It's going to be a little bit more like a reality show. But we can talk a little bit more about that after the break. I want to thank you very much for the call. You're going to head to a break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline at USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Available on the American Forces Network, the Cable Radio Network, the Sirius Satellite Radio app, TuneIn Radio app, searching Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline USA, the most listened to pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. And of course, we are up every single day at WrestlingObserver.com, daily audio shows. If you love this show and you only get here about once a week, you are missing out. Every single day, you could get audio. Myself, Dave Meltzer, Mike Sempervivi, all of the guests, all of the hosts, it's all available. Not only do you get brand new shows, two brand new shows every single day, but every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now. Thousands and thousands of hours of audio is available in our archives. Actually, we have double the amount of archives as the WWE Network. That's right. And a long-term subscription, a year or more, is $9.99 a month. Sign up today. I guarantee that if you like this show, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. So waste no time. Go sign up and enjoy the ride. Also, by the way, if you are in the Portland area, Wrestle Sport this Saturday night, August 16th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. I will be wrestling against Buddy Wayne. One of my latest final matches ever. It's coming up August 16th in Portland at the Oregon Convention Center. The website, wrestle-sport.com. Head up there and check that out. Wrestle-sport.com. Hope to see everybody there. Oregon Convention Center this coming Saturday night in Portland, Oregon. By the way, if you're listening on Sirius Satellite Radio and you happen to see a phone number on your radio for the studio, please do not call that number. The phone number, 855-478-4478. Once again, 855-478-4478. All of these numbers are up at WrestlingObserver.com if you forget them. So give us a call right now. Mike, who is winning Brie Bella versus Stephanie McMahon?
I'm going with Brie Bella.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why, but I'm just going to go ahead and go with Brie Bella. That way, actually, you know, I don't know. Maybe Nikki turns on her. There's so many things that could happen here. And you know what? If Daniel Bryan isn't going to be back until around the time of the Royal Rumble, maybe one Bella truly is enough. I just can't believe that that's the case. So I'll go with Brie Bella defeating Stephanie McMahon.
And we'll see what happens tomorrow as well, but we may have a special guest referee added to that match, none other than Triple H himself.
Really?
Yep. That would be quite the twist, especially they kind of built it up on Monday where Hunter said that he was removing himself from the festivities because he was the husband. Actually set up the perfect swerve of him making himself the guest referee. So
great makeout session, by the way.
Oh, yeah. To the phones, you're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Ivan from Scranton.
What's up, Ivan?
I had a question for you guys. You guys just touched on a little bit and how you were talking about how the belts, especially like the Intercontinental Championship, basically mean absolutely nothing in the WWE.
That's correct.
I was wondering when you thought that change occurred. Because I grew up in, you know, WrestleMania 10, you know, the ladder match, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon. Like, that was a big deal. The Intercontinental title was a huge deal. And for me, I started following off when they brought the other titles in from WCW and had the two championship titles, and it just became too much. Do you think that was what was the catalyst for making that title a little less, you know, a little less urgent? I mean, look at the Intercontinental Champion they had, Shawn Michaels, Ultimate Warrior, Razor Ramon, like legendary guys, and now it's like a joke. It doesn't matter anymore. What do you think that is?
I think that it didn't help when they brought in the WCW title. But the doom of the Intercontinental title to me was 97, 98, 99, when they started changing the title like 9,000 times, maybe even a little bit earlier. But, I mean, we had a period there where Val Venus, The Godfather, D'Lo Brown, China. Once the title started changing hands regularly and was kind of, I don't know. To me, the 97, 98, 99 period was where it really just became just another prop.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the call.
Thanks so much for the call. Man, he had no follow-up to my answer there, Mike. That's
yeah,
okay.
You know what? I actually agree with you in that. I mean, it was around that time. And when we were kids, at least people our age, there was that whole roll call of champions in the back of Inside Wrestling. And, you know, titles like the Intercontinental and the U.S. title, they had not been around a long time at that point. You know, in reality, the U.S. title from 1975, if you're a Crockett fan, or the Intercontinental title was from 1979 if you were a WWF fan. And you used to be able to, much like the world champions, name all of the guys. And all of the guys you would name were names like Morocco and Magnum TA and Steamboat and, you know, Savage and all of these guys for on both sides. And as you said, when they started to change it around and the Vince Russo mentality that this thing is just a prop, when that started to happen, the value of it completely went down, even though there were, you know, there's been plenty of times of greatness in the, you know, because after that time, you got the whole Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, William Regal, Eddie Guerrero sort of thing around that the time of those titles. So that was great. But with that said, even if they go on a run for a little while, they seem to always fall backwards and fall worse. And we're in a situation now where it's just complete career death to be anywhere near the IC or US titles.
When your friends stopped asking you who's the champion, that is when these titles stopped meaning anything, which was probably right around that period, actually. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Jim from Virginia.
Jim, what's happening?
I tell you, I heard you say something about maybe Triple H was going to be the referee for the Stephanie Brie Bella match at SummerSlam.
That has been rumored, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. Now, can you imagine that?
Is there any chance in the world that Brie would not go over on that match?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's
draw it out, man.
Yeah, Nikki could very well turn on Brie and cost her the match, setting up a feud on Total Divas.
Well, that could be true, but, I mean, I thought, you know, this whole thing of having her get beat down so much, you know, by the authority and... No, and even Stephanie last Monday night doing the pedigrees and everything, I thought it would be a done deal, you know, that she would definitely lose it at SummerSlam.
I do think here's one thing to consider, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
When I first heard that they were doing this match at SummerSlam, one mm-hmm. of the ideas bandied about was the stipulation would be that Brie was allowed back to have a match with Stephanie, but she had to beat Stephanie in order to get her job back. And of course, that would mean that Brie is probably certainly going to win the match. Well, if you follow the storyline, obviously, Brie has already been rehired. So she doesn't have to win this match. And unless they're going to be doing like a second match, maybe at the Night of Champions or whatever the September pay-per-view is. I mean, if Stephanie's only doing one match and they're going to do a Nikki Bella heel turn, this may be the time.
Has a sister feuding, huh?
Yeah. Feuding twins.
But like I said, I was really impressed with Stephanie being able to do the pedigree so good. I guess Triple H has taught her well.
He's a very complicated maneuver to execute, but he has taught her very well.
Exactly. One other thing I was going to ask you about. The women's wrestling people, myself included, have been buzzing about, well, there ain't nothing to buzz about now with TNA going out, the possibility of Jessica Havoc going to TNA.
That's right.
It everybody was talking about, you know, the HA, you know, the little video thing. So it is going to be her.
As far as I know, it's going to be Jessica Havoc, yeah.
And was that, I guess that's the reason that there was all that controversy with her and the WSU and all that sort of stuff. And there was a...
What are you talking about? Somebody explain this to me.
I don't know. Jim, you can explain this to me. There was a situation that took place where Havoc and some of her other indie groups had some issues.
Yes, tell me, Jim.
Well, I say what it was is there was a big pay-per-view coming up. I think she was the WSU champion at that time. And she chose to go for the it was back when they were recording the pay-per-view that they show. I think it's in September, the Knockouts, Knockdown, whatever you want to call it. I guess what it's called.
Sure.
And she chose to go there instead of do the pay-per-view. I mean, the pay-per-view. And they did not like that too well. And as far as that's what the problem came up, and they did the thing where they stripped her of the title and yada, 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 and all this good stuff.
Now,
so that's where I understand it.
How is she as a performer?
Well, she's not the best, I'll tell you like that, but she's very good.
Okay.
I'll tell you like that, she's very good. She's very good. I'll tell you one thing.
Where does she fall on the Melissa scale? If cheerleader Melissa is she 10?
Cheerleader Melissa? She's in that kind of, she's not as good as Melissa, I'm not going to tell you that, but she's in that same league for us, you know. She's in the upper echelon, I'll put you that way.
She's better than Velvet Sky, for example?
Oh, my God. Why don't you just,
or Brittany?
Yeah, come on.
I'm sorry, Jim. I'm sorry.
Taryn's made strides now.
Taryn is much better.
She did a thing one time where they did in WSU where she supposedly was going to try to kill Mercedes Martinez knife thing?
A machete?
Machete? Yeah, they did a whole thing, yeah.
That's
and
not right.
It was like it was really, really crazy. But, she does very good psycho-type promos, too. She even threatened to kill a priest one time on a promo.
Wow. Jim, where do you get all of your women's wrestling scoops?
Hey, do you want me to plug somebody else?
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay. Go ahead, plug someone.
Okay. Ring Bells is very good.
Okay.
Ring Bells is very good, and even Diva Dirt is good sometimes.
Sometimes.
But Ring Bells, if you want the really, really good indie women's wrestling stuff, or WWE, and that you go to ringbells.com, because they know.
All right.
Comes out there, and they have wrestling from the United States to France to Japan to Mexico, wherever the girls are wrestling. It's gonna make on Ring Bells,
and so that's where all the buzz is coming from.
Oh yeah, I mean they brought it up, and somebody on my Facebook wall brought it up first, and they said they actually made the comment that you had said it was gonna be somebody else, Brian.
That I did?
Yeah, that you said you were gonna make it, that it was supposed to be a male coming in.
Could have been. It could have been they got confused. They read Vinny's Impact report, and maybe he wrote something. But as far as I know, it's always it will always have been Havoc.
Well, let me ask you this now on the subject of TNA. Now, if everything is right, they're not going to have but till the end of October to be on television. Is that correct?
Well, if they don't get renewed, the contract is up in October. But I was told there's a possibility that they would not necessarily immediately go off the air. They might continue doing business for a little while. Maybe while TNA tries to find something to replace the time slot. I don't know. But yeah, things are not good for TNA if they don't sign this deal soon.
Well, even if that's the case, Shine and Shimmer would both probably have interest in her, as well as the fact that she's wrestled dudes in other matches. So Ring of Honor, TNA. I mean, if TNA, something happens with TNA, it's not great for her, but there's probably at least options for her.
Well, like I said, she's wrestled a lot down in Shine, because she was actually part of the Valkyrie, which was the heel girl group. And there was another group. She's got had another group of her own. I can't remember what it's called. But she had another heel group of her own, and she's been feuding down there with.
All right. Actually, we got to let you go, Jim.
Okay,
I do appreciate all of the info, but we got to head to a break. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Final segment here on the show, just want to direct everybody to WrestlingObserver.com. There's a brand new Scene Limite with Dave and Mike up on the site right now, 2.5 hours. If you're a big fan of New Japan, if you're a big fan of the mailbag, there's tons of great stuff in there. And, of course, later on tonight, myself and Craig are going to be back. We'll be talking SmackDown, NXT, and Ring of Honor. Do not forget, this coming Saturday night, August 16th, Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon, I will be wrestling. So if you're in the area, head down there to check that out. That's the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, August 16th. Go to wrestle-sport.com. That's wrestle-sport.com. That is the website. Head up there and check that out. Super China Buffet Day is coming up as well. If you're a subscriber to the website, you can head to the board. And in the Empire Get Together section, you can find out all the information. We will be at the Tulalip Hotel and Casino Buffet at about 4 o'clock p.m. This coming Sunday, we'll enjoy a buffet. And then we'll be heading over to my house to watch SummerSlam. So if you want to get involved, Tulalip Buffet this coming Sunday at 4 o'clock p.m. You have to pay for your own buffet, by the way. I'm not buying everybody's buffet. But show up there. It's a great buffet. It's going to be a lot of fun. And as always, want to thank Mike for not only doing the show today, but the Observer show as well. And he stepped in for me last Wednesday as well. Very helpful. So thanks, Mike. We'll talk to him again next week. We'll do a full SummerSlam preview. And of course, thanks everybody at Sports Byline USA and you, the listeners. We'll talk to you next week, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.